T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Time, Cam. Thank you so much for jumping on.
Guys, thank you. And it is actually Cameron Inman as Dan Dibley, probably.
Appreciate it. I prefer Daniel if we're going to keep it formal, Cameron. Thank you.
I apologize, Cam. I should have been sharper.
Joseph, Lorenzo, have a good morning. Everybody drive safely out there.
My man. It's great.
You two are something else.
The word of the day,
back and forth.
Word of the day appears to be gregarious.
Yeah.
I like the fact that we're a gregarious radio program, I would say, that by definition, fond of company and sociable. That sounds like us. That sounds like me, I would say. I don't know about you guys. I won't speak for everyone, but fond of company and sociable. There's no better way to describe Joe Fortenbaugh than that.
I could think of a few other words, but yeah, we'll go with that, Joe.
We're going to go with gregarious. Joe Gregarious Fortenbaugh.
From gregarious to Shandarius, which if you type that in, up pops the fact that he was a very good high school basketball player. You can go back to his time in Oxford, Mississippi. The internet sometimes, Joe, can be an absolute wonderment.
If utilized properly, you can come across quite a bit of good information.
Even improperly. And I feel like this is an improper use of said internet.
One big piece of news in a second. I'm going to tease up a question. Which brothers would you rather have? The Watt brothers or the Bosa brothers?
Wow.
It's a great question.
There you go.
Great question.
Obviously, it's Bosa, and we'll just move on. You want the Bosa brothers. I don't need two guys who aren't in the playoffs on my team because right now I'm talking about the NFC Championship game. I need guys who can play in NFC Championship games.
All jokes aside, if you were going to say, look at their body of work and say.
It's a great question aside.
You think who's going to end up with more sacks, the Watt brothers or the Bosa brothers, if you think about their you know, but their trajectory is because the young Watt brother over in Pitch in the Steelers, he's a beast as
he's
well.
He's a good player.
Pro Bowler this year.
Yeah.
He had a really good season.
He did.
Really good season. And as soon as his brother made one singular play against some Bills team that was lucky to be in the postseason, he was immediately on his phone texting the world as if ESPN didn't cover it enough for us.
I mean, he's been injured. I mean, with all due respect, the guy, when he's well, he's hell. You got to admit that, right?
What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to just sit here and make adjustments when people get hurt. You got to check, go out there and make a play. And if you can't make the play, that's okay. But I don't want to hear excuses. That's what it is with Watt. It's excuse after excuse. My back's broken. My neck's broken. My arm's out of its socket. Rub some dirt on it, son. Mm. Go make a momentum-changing play.
Spinal.
You talk about injuries, though, and Quan Alexander, we're kind of forgetting the fact that he's recovering from a torn pec. The way he played low, it didn't seem like he was favoring. It didn't seem like it was much of an issue at all.
Shocking that him and Watt, both of them suffering injuries that were supposed to knock him out for the season, and they both came back to participate in the playoffs. Both played well, too. They weren't like the 1 year Gronk forced himself out there in the Super Bowl against the Giants, but he clearly wasn't 100%. He was a non-factor. Watt was a factor against the Bills, and Alexander was a factor against the Vikings, man.
Yeah, they have been. And you look at Quan. Quan was just disruptive. Didn't necessarily have no earth-shattering tackles that we're used to seeing him have. But you saw him around the ball. You saw him on the screen plays, being able to beat a guard or a tackle that's trying to block him in space. And he knows how to get skinny. Takes away a shoulder, and then he gets back in that lane, and you see Cook have to deviate where he wants to go, turn him inside to where those guys, those boy dogs are, that's running to the football. That's what they do. They do a phenomenal job of running to the football. And young Nicky Bosa, his tongue's hanging out of his mouth. They finish. You watch these guys. You watch Buckner. You watch these guys, Armstead. After they go, it's called retrace. They retrace and go back. They go, try to get to the quarterback, and then, bam, they take off. If it's a screen or whatever, they retrace, and they go get that ball. They do must do a great job at practice doing those drills where you touch the bag and run to the sideline to go get it because they are always trying to ball hawk, and the linebackers do a great job of funneling things back in. And Quan, with that shoulder, with the torn pec, coming back out there, and you watch him just disrupting the screen game and doing things in the run game. These guys, they're playing together. They're on a united front. I can't wait to watch these guys play.
I can't either, and it's got to be fun for Robert Saleh to coach these guys up, knowing that you've got speed, speed, and speed in your linebacking core. So you got the boy dogs up front that you always like to call them,
yeah.
The fearsome four. And if somebody gets through to that second level, you know you've got closing speed with Quan Alexander and Fred Warner. Dre Greenlaw, no slouch as far as the quickness either. So let alone that third level of defense where you still have Richard Sherman, but just having those linebackers for this defensive scheme, this is what Robert Saleh has wanted.
Big news out of the NFL. We know who will be singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. Do we have a drum roll, please?
Of course we do.
Demi Lovato. Demi Lovato will be singing the national anthem at this year's Super Bowl in Miami. I can't tell you much about Demi Lovato. Nice guy. You're the person I would lean on in times like this. What can you tell us about Demi Lovato?
Very popular singer. Had some issues in the past, but has gotten over those issues and now is back singing the national anthem. Hasn't come out with anything in a while. She started out doing a little bit of Disney Channel work, and she, you know, more of a singer now and everything.
She was someone that came up through the Disney avenue, like Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears were on the Mouseketeers, I believe. J.C. Chassé was also a part of that. What's so funny about these facts? These are better facts than you gave, and I brought you on to give facts.
It's more the way you pronounce J.C. Chassé.
Isn't that the name? Isn't that the young man's name?
Chassé.
I doubt it. I find that highly questionable in the words of Dan Lebatard.
If I may, what's some of the issues? Cocaine? Was it drugs? What's going on?
You could ask that off the air.
With the Watt brothers, you were talking about JJ and you were talking about TJ. You forgot about the fullback, Lo. About Derek?
He's Derek down there in LA with the Chargers. No, nice young man. Like him. He's a little headbutter, one of the hit guys. Yeah.
Another Watt that's not in the playoffs right now, just if we're keeping score. Every Watt on earth not in the playoffs. Niners in playoffs.
All three Watts.
Bosa, 50% playoff rate right now. That's big. Big if true, especially at this time of year.
A depression, eating disorder, and she was bullied. So just to clean up Steven's mess.
The text line wants to know what's going on, what happened. And he made it sound like there was something serious. But that is very serious. But could have just let us know. And, man, good thing.
She did have a near opioid overdose back in 2018 as well.
This is a light conversation for everyone driving around. Let's dig into opioids. How's everyone feel about the opioid crisis? You want to move past it now?
It was just...
Want to get back to Watt versus Bosa?
The Bosa brothers and Watt?
I'll give you something more important. We got the over-under already out on this national anthem time, which is more important, as we all know.
Oh, my God.
As we all know, Joey Courtside likes to bet the national anthem.
Don't do it this year. It's just...
How dare you, sir? How dare you tell me how to win my money?
Listen, don't do it this year. It's a trap.
154 is what we're looking at.
That's a good
54.
Number.
Apparently, the offshore establishment that put this number up did exactly what half of society that's texting me right now, because they know how much I love this bet, did. You immediately find instances in which the individual in question has sung the anthem in the past, and you get a time on it. Apparently, Demi Lovato sung the national anthem at a World Series game in 2015, if these text messages I'm getting from fellow degenerates are correct, and she was just under 2 minutes. Just under 2 minutes. So 154 is your current time that's out there for the national anthem. Once I hear the Saturday rehearsals from my inside source, I will report back to you with what I am thinking. 2 years in a row, I have made wildly, wildly irresponsible bets on that, and 2 years in a row, I've won. But also, the toll it took on my life during those 2 minutes, probably not worth the cash.
Well, you got to scout it, Joe, because 2011, Game 5, she sang it. She also sang it for Mayweather-McGregor, and sang it on one other occasion. So you got to go through and pick through the different anthems, and how has she evolved as a national anthem singer over the years? You would figure when you're younger, you're trying to make that imprint and make it a special thing, so maybe it goes longer. Now it's more business-like. You're trying to get through it. So the early lean, I think, is on the under.
Early lean on the under. That's pretty good assessment right there. I'd buy into that.
Probably too good, sadly. You got me locked in on this bet. It's always the most exciting part of the pregame.
I know. It's a mess. I waited my whole life for the Eagles to win a Super Bowl, and I had that bet. And as soon as it cashed, my family's looking at me, and they're like, all right, you know, here we go. Let's go, Eagles. I was like, forget about the Eagles. Who cares? Everyone get out of my apartment. We did what we needed to do. We won the anthem. We can move on.
Must be a good feeling.
Well, what happens with it is that the Saturday, to let everyone in on the secret, on Saturday, the national anthem rehearsals take place within the studio, within the stadium. And there's always someone in there that records them. And they do four or five renditions. They go through it. And it turns out it's generally lip synced. It's a recording. So you time it out and you get five in a row that are like a minute 55. That news leaks. You race to get as much money down as you possibly can. And then the market corrects itself. Bets are taken off the board. I don't think this year this will even exist. I don't think you'll be able to bet more than maybe $20 on this year, because a notable betting guy blew the lid off this thing last year for a couple of retweets, and he outed the fact that how we were all winning money on this. So now everyone's wise to the racket, and I don't think the opportunity is going to be there. So you'll be able to bet it, but the number's going to be right on the number of what the timing is, and then they're going to juice the heck out of it to try to take advantage of you, and then you're only going to be able to get like $50 down anyway. So the jig is probably up on this. It's a good run. It's a good run.
Great run.
Get out with your cash, right? Don't stick around at the table for too long. They're going to get you back. But that's where we're at right now with the National Anthem. But more updates. Jolo and Dibs will have plenty of prop action for you in the build-up to the Super Bowl.
And even the even bigger news that came out surrounding the Super Bowl is Bill Vinovich will be the white hat referee. So one of the great veteran refs gets the gig for Super Bowl 54. So I look forward to watching he and his crew just dominate as the third team on the field in the Super Bowl.
What can you tell us about him?
Bill's been around forever. I think this will be his third Super Bowl. And, you know, we lost a lot of white hat referees over the past year or two. Gene Steratore and the other guys going up in the booth. So the fact that they tabbed Vinovich, one of the great veterans, smart move by the league.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that come Super Bowl Sunday. Let him play, though. You got to coach him up to let him play in these games. If anyone noticed, in the national championship game Monday night, did you see how they were playing that game early?
Yeah.
Very handsy. Everybody wanted PI calls early. You were not getting them.
Right.
I'd be coaching the team to be aggressive. I think you can play into this mentally. I would gamble on this. If I was Shanahan, if I was Salah especially, I'd be telling my team, I want you to err on the side of aggression rather than caution. The league does not want a ref show. They've made it very clear. They do not want a scenario where there are flags all over the field delaying the game, slowing everything down, mucking up the work. They do not want controversy. They do not want these scenarios. They are more inclined to let you play. Vinovich, I'm joking around with you, but I'm sure that crew is going to be a great crew for the Super Bowl, because if you've noticed, the last few years, the Super Bowl very rarely has any referee controversy.
Right.
Can we think of any? Like the Eagles... Patriots Super Bowl, there were some calls that people wanted, but it really came down to a matter of not getting the calls because they played physical. The Eagles realized before the Patriots you could get away with more, and the Eagles took advantage of that. Last year it was similar. I don't remember a whole lot of penalties being called in that Rams-Patriots game. Point being, I think there's instruction. Let's not make it about us.
Right.
When in doubt, err on the side of the player and let him play. Do what you got to do. Delay of game, you got to call that, right? The obvious ones you call, and then the really egregious stuff you try to knock out of the park. But when it's ticky-tack, when it's close, let them go. And if I'm Salah and I'm the Niners, that's what I'm telling the defense. When in doubt, err on the side of caution. Get in there, get physical. Play like Richard Sherman. And then if they start calling you early, then you can adjust.
And you saw it this past weekend against Minnesota. I don't believe the Vikings received their first penalty until midway through the third quarter. And to your point, false start, delay a game.
Yeah.
Those things you're going to call because those are like what I call the parking tickets of the game. You're moving violations,
good.
Your holds, your pass interferences. You're going to make sure, like, you're not going to ticket a guy for going, unless you're in the Mita, where you go 26 miles
they'll
an hour and at 25. You're getting pulled over in the Mita.
Motorcycle cups get you.
Yeah, they're sleeping
you.
On
Mita's
you.
Tight, huh?
The Mita's tight, super bro. Tight.
Tightest
coach.
Of all Bay Area communities
no
in terms
questions.
Of tickets.
Marin County's right there.
No, the Mita's tough. The motorcycle
he's cop. Lived in both. You have not.
Joe,
so just you can't just dismiss him like that.
I'm dismissing. They're in the alley.
You can dismiss him for a lot. I don't know about that. That's
they're
not the stuff.
He's just waiting.
He used to fly around in the helicopter.
I've spent more time in Alameda than he will ever dream about spending. We've been over this time and time again.
Also, it's the Mita, please.
And I've been referring to it as such accordingly because people hit me with the Mita all the time on the streets. The more affluent the community, the more likely you are to get a ticket for going 26 and a 25.
When you say you spent more time, are you serious? I mean, I've been there now for a while. Did you really spend more time? Or you passed through it? Have you spent more time and nights there? Honestly?
Lowe's got roots.
Thank you. You have not spent.
And I mean, roots-ish.
I'd be willing to bet that I spent more nights there in the Mita.
How long have you been living over there now?
Like 2 years.
At least 2 years,
yeah
since you moved out of the loin.
And why don't you tell the audience why you moved to the East Bay? It's because your buddy, your boy, Dan Dibley, telling you, the Mita's the place you ought to be, so you loaded up the truck and you moved to Beverly.
And then under.
Thank you. You probably spent more time there than I have. I don't. I
know, you got to figure by minute, right. Even though you've been there quite
no
a
doubt.
Bit. Him
I
living
know,
there now,
I
all those hours just sleeping.
Especially
there.
By night, because when the sun goes down, you won't find me in the meter.
Why not?
Because of
down.
All those factors, they're coming after you. They're coming after everyone over there.
It closed. It didn't mean it's a great town. It closed down early. The town closed.
It closes down
do
early,
like
and then they over police.
They yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you want to keep it safe, so I'd imagine, you know. So you would rank Marin 1, Mita 2 in
yeah.
terms of police presence handing out tickets.
And again, it's relative to the affluence, because you go from Oakland to Piedmont, you'll find yourself all of a sudden in Piedmont, and then there's Piedmont police everywhere. Then you bleed back into Oakland, and it's, you know, good old anarchy.
Yeah.
Lawlessness. Affluence and affluence and over policing, they go hand in hand.
Lawlessness.
It's a fact.
He's so silly.
Fact.
A message for the billions. If you haven't already, do us a favor. Download the radio.com app today. Tune into your boys, Joe Lo and Dibs. You can catch all the latest 49er news, interviews, and updates.
I do.
Man, we got a lot going on today. All the good stuff, of course, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
I do enjoy those nights of Friday nights and Saturday nights where the coach gets up there and he just talks about Friday the officials. And just like you have a scouting report for players, Joe, coaches go and they go ham on the
really?
Officials. Oh, yeah. Wait.
How long is this meeting? This is a meeting specifically about the officials and their tendencies.
Yeah, they're like, here's going to be our officials. They tell you who's going to be the line judge. They tell you who's going to be the back guy. It's crazy. Talk about he'll let you play. This guy's going to, he's got a tendency for this. You get a scouting report on the officials. And you're right, Dibs went and Joe, when you're talking about I'm coaching a certain way, hey, be aggressive. They're going to let you play. You can be a little handsy. Hey, this guy's not going to get on you. So you're right. Coaches teach and practice that. It's no question that what you're saying, it happens. I've been around it, and I love when your coaches go over that. You know the officials, who's out there, and you know what to say to them. Hey, this guy doesn't like to talk much. Don't leave him alone. Let him do his job. It's crazy how in-depth they are.
Leave no stone unturned.
Yeah.
Stakes are high this time of year. You cannot afford to not
don't get any higher.
Look at the officials and try to understand how they call games. Gamblers look at the officials. One of the most important elements to betting on baseball is understanding who's calling the balls and strikes. That has a dramatic impact on the over-under. Dramatic impact.
It does. Say hi, 510. When you see me in media at Safeway, see the big buff dude, say hello to me.
Chilton Auto Body text line 95795 from the 510. I always see Lowe and Alameda at random places like Safeway. Why is Safeway random? Every human on earth goes to the grocery store. Every human on earth, even the homeless, they're in the grocery store every day. Literally, there's no place that's less random than a grocery store. Can't miss that buff dude. Yeah, that's true. He's in a yellow t-shirt today. Looks very, very muscular.
He was in the kitchen rolling up his sleeves, and we got a bunch of listeners coming in, and he was making sure that the gun show is ready to begin at 9 o'clock.
Beefcake style. You're looking good. You going to do some push-ups before the listeners get here?
I love the Alameda police. One of the guys actually is from the Valley, the Central Valley, but the 510, you see that again. So the meetup officers, they're great people.
I'm not saying I don't love them.
Yeah, no one's coming down the alley of the police.
I'm just saying I don't go 26 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone.
He told you go for a ride along. One of the police officers in the media seen that text.
How about that? Go take a ride along.
Yeah, it'd be great.
You could be a police officer for a day.
Exactly.
Deputy Dibley.
Yep.
Here comes Deputy Dibley.
Yeah. Why, yes.
No, it's great.
Said he'll go for a ride along, sir. Yes, sir.
Would love that. It'd be great. We can just set up a sting and, you know, pull people over for infractions that may or may not exist.
You can do the meow game.
I love the meat of police.
You ever see Super Troopers?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, car, sir. Right meow.
Rather than meow. Meow. Game.
Meow. What's coming up in the game is brought to you by Bay Alarm. All right. The running game. Get to know Aaron Jones. Get to know the San Francisco 49er game. Running game, which you know. The one question we're going to address, and there's a lot to get to in this next segment, we're going to open up to you guys as well. 888-957-9570. Is this game going to be won via the ground or the air? And that's on both fronts. Offensively and defensively against the run. Offensively and defensively against the pass. Will this game, the 2020 NFC Championship game, be won on the ground or through the air? 888-957-9570. Protect your business with a video surveillance system from Bay Alarm. Bay Alarm can monitor your security cameras live and report a crime in progress or prevent a false alarm. Bay Alarm, What have you got to lose? Big man over here almost got taken down by the balloons on the way out the hall. Yeah, it was. I was going to move past it, but you talked about the decorum, so I brought up the incident where we were walking out. He's trying to tell a story. He crashes into a bunch of balloons.
Man.
One of the nastiest fullbacks of all time almost got beat up by two balloons.
Didn't want to walk on the nice green carpet because it's such a nice runway. Don't want to jack it up with the, you know, it's got it to 10 to 20.
It's very elegant.
Very elegant. So I just kind of walked along the wall, and that balloon got in my way. So I didn't pop it.
He's lost a step.
Man.
Couldn't even pop a balloon.
That's tough. That's real tough.
3 for 20 out there if you're interested. Joe Lowen, Dibs, 95.7 the game. Yeah, I made it weird. I have to. That's how I do things. Question for this segment. Is this game going to be won through the air or on the ground? That's what I want to know. And I'm not just talking about, well, Garoppolo will outduel Rodgers and that wins. No, I'm talking about the defensive element to this too. You can win this game on the ground by A, imposing your will, Niner style, on the Packer defense, which ranks 23rd against the run, and shutting down their run game, which makes them one-dimensional. That's how you win the game on the ground. Or is this going to be the type of game where perhaps both running games struggle to get something going, and it turns into a good old-fashioned Jimmy Garoppolo versus Aaron Rodgers duel for the ages? We saw that in New Orleans. In New Orleans, it was all about the quarterbacks rolling up the yardage. That doesn't mean they were the only guys making plays, but that was a straight shootout. This game, with a total of 45 and with a really good defense in the Niners grabbing home field advantage here, seems as if you're not going to get the New Orleans style of shootout. But if you're going to win it through the air or on the ground, how do you think it's going to play out?
I think it's the ground, and it's the ground because offensively, the 49ers have an elite running game, number two in the regular season in rushing yardage. And really, you could think about it as them being the number one rush team because Lamar Jackson was such a unique presence in their run game. If you take Lamar Jackson away, Baltimore and the Niners have very comparable rush attacks. So I think the 49ers, their run game is probably the best of the four units. Run game, run defense, pass defense. So for me, the template for the 49ers is the same as it's been all year. Possess the ball, run the ball, limit what the opposition can do offensively, and win the game that way.
Church pew seat draws. How far between you and Dibs?
Church pew, but not draws. Or hey. Sitting on anyone's lap because it's going to be by balance. You know, listen to my children. You know, I said it's definitely going to be running the ball, but you are also going to have balance. I don't see Green Bay having that type of balance, Joe. I think Green Bay, I think you can make them more one-dimensional. But I don't think that the Niners are just going to hold their hat back and run. I think you got to be balanced. If you just say it's going to just be running, I think the Green Bay will stifle it because it's just going they'll do it. I think the play action, all the different things, I think you're going to have balance. I don't think there's going to be that much like last week. The skew of 20 more runs. No, it won't be. It'd be way, way more balanced than that. It won't be just all running. But but both teams are going to try to establish the run.
Kyle said after the win against Minnesota, when he was addressing the team, that the goal was to put 30 runs on the board. They wanted to run the ball 30 times in that game, that if they reached 30 runs, they felt confident that would mean they were winning the game. They ended up with 47 runs. It was a dominant performance on the ground, absolutely dominant. You got to figure, if he had that sort of mark for the Minnesota game, wouldn't he have a goal for the Green Bay game as well, that they want to go in and run it a certain amount of times? Or do you think they abandon that and have a completely different game plan?
Well, I think when you look at Minnesota compared to what you're playing in Green Bay, I think Minnesota team is a little bit more stouter against the pass than the Packers. So I think they went in that saying, look, we have to dominate this run. We got to make sure we're going to run the ball to keep them off tilter. And if you run the ball on them and become one-dimensional and take away their run, you knew Kirk Cousins was going to have to beat you. Aaron Rodgers is going to have to beat you regardless. This is Aaron Rodgers, and this passing game is going to have to win. I don't think that they can run the ball with consistency and beat the Niners. So when you're saying, are they going to this game to saying 30? Yeah, I think they're saying 30, but I think that you're still going to see if it's 30, it's going to be 25 passes. I think you can be more balanced against Green Bay than you were against
Minnesota.
See,
the thing with the Packers, and this is where the confidence comes from, this is where I laid the 7 with the Niners, it's not just about what happened in the Seattle game, but watch them. Watch them in the Seattle game where they had every advantage known to man. They were at home, and they had 2 weeks of rest against a Seattle team that had just gone to Philadelphia for their sixth East Coast trip of the year, now had to come back across to play in Lambeau. They were injured across the board on both sides of the ball. And in that game, Green Bay couldn't really get the running game going. Jones looked good in the first half, but they couldn't run the ball in the second half when they wanted to. Rodgers didn't have some game for the ages against the Seahawks. They played great in the first half, and then you saw they were stifled largely in the second half. I think they were outscored something like 20-6 or 21-7, whatever it was, in the second half. They let that game nearly get away from them. If you couldn't perform with a level of consistency against that team in that situation, how are you going to do it this Sunday? Because it's going to be a much more hostile environment that is a complete 180 from what you just had, and you're going to go against an absolutely ferocious defense, which you did not face in Seattle. Seattle does not have a good defense. By virtually every metric, they're bottom 10 in the NFL.
That's why they give me balance.
The crowd noise in this game and the pass rush alone in this game are going to be the difference for me. I do not see Rodgers coming in here and having the Aaron Rodgers game for the ages. I think he's going to be under duress early and often. That doesn't mean he's not going to make any plays.
Right.
But I don't see him just getting going. Drew Brees got going against these guys. All right? Matt Ryan got going against this defense. I don't see that happening.
And that happened, the Drew Brees game happened at home against a team coming off the most physical game they played all year against Baltimore. This is a different situation. The Niners defense has an extra day of rest. I don't know if an extra day is a huge factor, but they didn't have to travel. The Packers will have to travel. And the Niner defense, it was light work against Minnesota. They had 7 3-and-outs, the Vikings did, and that doesn't include the drive where it was a third play and Kirk Cousins threw the interception to Richard Sherman. So really, 8 3-and-outs, if you want to account for that. You didn't have any of these defenders have to go out there and really play heavy duty. So extra day of rest, Niners still at home, crowd noise.
No travel.
And light work, no travel. I think all those factors make it so Aaron Rodgers is not going to be able to get comfortable and light him up. Now, he's not going to have 103 yards. I think we can all agree he's not going to repeat.
I'm probably betting the over there.
Yeah, because that's what he had in the first matchup between these two teams. I don't think he's going to have 400 yards. He's not going to have 100. It'll be probably closer to 200. If you keep Rodgers under 300 yards low, you win this game.
I wonder what the prop is for that.
Yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers have 250. I think he's going to get
it's a pretty big number against the number one pass defense.
Only reason because they're going to have to throw the ball. I think Aaron Rodgers, the difference is this time, I think Aaron Rodgers have success early. I think they're going to come out and they're going to be up-tempo. I think they have more success in the first half than they do in the second. I think the second half, I think that's when I think it can get carried away. I think you're going to see a team, and usually the Niners get tired in the fourth quarter. I just think that they're going to be – I think the second half, because they're going to be up, I think they can cut it loose. But I just think that Aaron Rodgers is going to throw the ball. When you're going to have to throw it that many times, you're going to have some type of success. And I think that's going to be – that's why I think that he goes for 250.
All right, so if that's the case, tell me about Aaron Jones. What's the scouting report here, and how much should we worry about him? Green Bay Packer running back, 5'9", 208 pounds. He was a fifth-round pick out of UTEP, Old Texas El Paso, right across the old Mexican border there in 2017. This is his third year in the league, and this was his breakout year in which he played all 16 games. Ran for 1,084 yards with 16 rushing touchdowns. He led the NFL in that category. He also contributed in a big way in the passing game. 49 receptions for 474 yards and 3 touchdowns. When it was all said and done, Aaron Jones touched the ball 285 times, racking up 1,558 yards and 19 touchdowns. He ranked 8th at the running back position in total yards. So take rushing yards and take passing yards and combine them. He ranked 8th. Trivia question time. You two are working with Nice Guy and Curly, who is always involved in this but never actually does anything.
Never I've says noticed. Anything.
Never says a word. Who are the 7 that finished above Aaron Jones at the running back position, total yardage?
McCaffrey.
And remember, punts and all that not included.
McCaffrey.
Excuse me?
Thank you.
Is it a final answer? Have you all agreed upon Christian McCaffrey?
Final.
John, is that okay with you?
Thumbs up. That's great for radio. The thumbs up. Yes, Christian McCaffrey finished first. Nice one, Low. 2,392 yards. Huge season for McCaffrey. He was number one. Now is where it gets interesting.
Yeah, Saints. You get the Saints running back.
Alvin Kamara?
Absolutely.
Is that okay with you, my man? We'll go with Kamara.
Incorrect.
Great, Low.
Kamara missed a bunch of games this year.
Oh, he did, huh? I mean,
what do you mean, great, low, thanks? You had the opportunity to weigh in. Nice guy was, he had like the puke face. Like he was about to throw up.
Well, because last week we did trivia and I had an incorrect answer and Lowe was saying, oh, I'm the one who's carrying the water.
No.
And
this is why you guys suck at trivia. You immediately fall apart at the seams.
No, I'm fine.
Immediately have fallen apart at the seams.
Did Cook miss a lot of
games? Dalvin Cook?
Yeah, in Minnesota.
Cook's got to be up there. I'd go Cook. Curly, you'd go Cook, right?
What? Going Cook.
Let's go Cook.
My man. Dalvin Cook, Joe, is our answer.
Let's Cook. He ranks sixth.
Nicely
done.
Nice with the let's cook. I like that. I like that.
That's what I do around here.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry, even though he doesn't catch many passes, he's got to be up there in yardage, too.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go with Derrick Henry. The confidence of a nice guy, Steven, right now is really refreshing.
Number four for Derrick Henry. Nicely done. Nicely done.
Three down and four to go.
What about Zeke? You guys like Zeke on this board here?
Is the guy who does 5 to 6 just firing on all cylinders? He's got suggestions. He's got analysis.
Yeah, you told him to jump in.
While the two trained pros just sit back and fight each other. Incredible.
I like Zeke. Zeke does a lot. You got to look, Dallas, he's their main guy.
I'm going to go get me a cup of joy and just sit back and enjoy. We're going to bask in the glow of NGS. We're going to go with Ezekiel Elliott, Joe.
Got it. Zeke was number two behind Christian McCaffrey. Three more that ranked ahead of Aaron Jones in terms of total yardage this year. You got McCaffrey, you got Zeke, you got Derrick Henry, and you got Dalvin Cook. There are three other running backs who had more total yards this year than Aaron Jones.
You know, my guy would be in Seattle, but when did he get hurt? 11 or 12? Because he had over 1,000 yards rushing. They lost, and he had...
Chris Carson?
Yeah, but I don't know what...
I was thinking about Mark Ingram, too, in Baltimore, because they were so unbelievable. They had 3,300 yards rushing as a team. We know that Lamar Jackson had about 1,100, so...
Ingram didn't get to 1,000, but he did catch some passes, but he was right there by 1,000, because Lamar wanted to get him to 1,000. Didn't have 1,000 yards rushing, but he caught some balls too.
Sure.
This is good discussion. This is good back and forth.
Yeah, so
good
I needed that validation from you, Joe.
But generally it's not. I figured the rare times it is, I'll step in and congratulate.
But he touched it, so he did catch it, so we can go with Ingram.
Nice guy, Steven. You've been running hot.
Yeah, go with Ingram. Let's see if Ingram.
Mark Ingram, Joe, is our answer.
Oh, no. No, you got it wrong. That's the wrong sound effect. Wrong sound effect.
We got one more.
You got one more strike. I'll give you one more strike on this. You got three more names that racked up at the running back position more total yards than Aaron Jones. He ranked eighth. You already got Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Derrick Henry, and Dalvin Cook. There are three more names on the board.
So, look, if you go to the NFC West where we're out here, you think about with the Niners, no one did.
Right.
So if you look at Seattle, it would be close because they had it.
It would be close.
And
Cardinals, nobody.
Nobody. Cardinals. Rams say no one.
Todd Gurley, no.
Don't forget about the champion Eagles.
Yeah, I can't even name their running back.
That was good.
Chubb. We'll go with Nick Chubb from the Cleveland Browns.
You will not go with anything. You will clear it with your teammates, and then you will present it as an option.
Do you hear this conversation? I'm not going with them. Nick Chubb.
You're right. Yeah, nice Chubby's, guy. Nick Chubb. Chubby. Nick yeah. Chubb, number three.
Chubb, remember, Chubb's
nice
had,
done.
Chubb's had a
just OJ'd right in there.
I like Chubb.
Right in between your discussion.
No, Chubby's had a,
I brought you into this business, and I can take you out.
What again?
Hey, Steven.
Two more names.
Hey, Steven. Steven. What's up with your Raiders? You had a guy that had
6'10".
He had 1,000 yards rushing as a rookie.
Yeah, but Josh Jacobs didn't catch many passes out of the backfield, so I wouldn't go with him with total yardage.
Then let's not. I was just running.
Two more names in terms of running backs this year. Yeah. Total yardage. Christian McCaffrey had the most. Aaron Jones of the Green Bay Packers ranked eighth. We're trying to get the seven that ranked above Aaron Jones. You have knocked off Christian McCaffrey, Zeke Elliott, Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, and Dalvin Cook. There are two remaining.
If you have one strike left. If we said the AFC, you look at the Chargers, didn't have anyone.
I'm thinking about the Colts. I'm thinking about Marlon Mack from the Colts. He missed a couple of games, but I would think Marlon Mack would be up there.
Marlon Mack, and let's think about Saquon. Saquon, you know, he has some...
Shout out Penn State.
So those two guys... And,
it's going to hurt Lowe to have to go to Joey Fort's alma mater.
Yeah, painful.
Those two guys were pretty good. Steven?
Would you go Marlon Mack over Saquon or Saquon over Marlon Mack on this one, Curly?
Going Saquon.
You'd go Saquon?
My man.
All right, Curly, we'll go with you. Saquon?
Steven speaks for the crew. Saquon Barkley.
It's incorrect.
Thanks,
Saquon
Steven.
Barkley was injured for quite a few games this season.
Great job back
quite
there, guys.
Quite a few games this season. Newsflash, in order to rack up yards, you got to be able to play. I'm going to give you one more. That's how gregarious I am. I'm gregarious and magnanimous. Those are the two ways we describe Joey Courtside today. Gregarious and magnanimous.
Okay.
I think we should ride or die with your Chris Carson call, unless you think that that's not...
Okay, and let's go with... I'm just looking at AFC. We haven't hit all the AFC. Okay. What did your boy in Jacksonville, he carried a load.
Your boy.
I think
Carson, at your boy.
Leonard Fournette.
And Indy. So I'm up to you guys.
Jacksonville had a big season, as we all know. Lots of offense in Jacksonville this
year.
Not
a lot of offense, but he was just a one-man thing. That's all they had. But,
like I'm going Marlin. That's where I'm at.
All right, let's go Marlin.
Marlin Mack is our answer.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Leonard Fournette was on the list. Leonard Fournette was on the list, and you fools, I gave it to you.
I said,
go to Philadelphia. Y'all laughed. Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders finished seventh, right above Aaron Jones. I gave it to you.
You did.
You spit in my face, and you threw out a bunch of nonsense instead. When are you going to learn? Every time we go through this stuff, I give you the right answers, and you sit here and you fight amongst each other, and then you lose.
It's wildly inaccurate because you will steer us wrong more often than you'll steer us right.
You don't know that.
Additionally, you can't be trusted, quite frankly.
Did you get one?
Who we're a team, Joe. Yeah. There's no I
in
team.
Oh, tell him, Dippers. Tell him.
Nice guy got a bunch, but he also had all the wrong ones,
too. He barged in with the easy ones. I'm sitting back here trying to pick through the minutiae.
Right, coach.
This is good company, though. Back to Aaron Jones. Yeah. He ranked eighth in total yardage. The only guys ahead of him, McCaffrey, Zeke Elliott, Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, and Miles Sanders. All guys that had big seasons. A lot of these guys played on good football teams as well. Good football teams as well. So you got to figure, how much of a threat is he going to be? How much do you have to worry about him? Do you have to worry about Aaron Jones more than you worry about Devontae Adams, for example?
Yeah, and me, I'd say yes.
I think so.
I think it's 110. I think 110, that's the number. I don't want him over 110 total offense. That's receiving, that's by air and by run.
110. That's still 110. A healthy number against this team.
It's a healthy number. That's a very healthy number. But that's, you know, that's 60 on each. If you can do that, you still, or 55, 110, you're all right. That's so 55 rushing, 55 passing. I think you're still safe. But if you look at that, that can accumulate to, you know, 10 first downs. So got to keep him. You can't have Aaron Rodgers and the running back working on all cylinders. You got to shut down one. I hope they shut down the run and make Aaron Rodgers beat you. I don't think that he can, because I don't think that offensive line can protect long enough.
Aaron Jones, in the first meeting between these two, Sunday night, week 12, 13 carries, 38 yards, no touchdowns. In the passing game, he was targeted once, didn't catch it. Nothing in the passing game. One target, and that was it. It was his second worst game of the season, believe it or not. The next week against the Giants, he did virtually nothing. But that was a blowout win for the Packers, and Rodgers did it a lot through the air in that game.
Shut him down. That is my that is the biggest concern for me, Daniel, is to shut him down, make this team one-dimensional. You shut him down in a pass, you shut him down in a run, and I think that your job got easier.
Thinking the same thing?
Yeah, and I think it all comes down to what Lowe's been saying all week, and that's winning on first and second down. Because you look at the first meeting, and we talked about how bad the Packers were on third down. And I'll just run through what the third down yardages were in order. It was third and 10, 4, 9, 13, 8, 35.
Oh, my God.
Which, by the way, they converted via a penalty, third and 35. 8, 6, 8, 8, 8, 6, 10, 15, 7, and 9. There's only one third and short.
Third and four.
Third and four was the only one. So if you win on first and second down,
you see what your boy
the average
saying.
Here was about third and 10 each and every time. So you're absolutely spot
you're
on.
Right. They have got to stay ahead of the sticks. If Green Bay wants any chance, you've been saying it all week, they have got to stay ahead of the sticks. Those are crazy numbers.
Crazy numbers.
That's I went through this yesterday really, and was just trying to see why would he be so poor on third down. And even when he converted, late in the game, he converted. It was third and 15. They got a pass for 7. It was third and 7. They got a pass for 3.
That's why it's so important, Joe. And I've been saying it, because now if it's third and 10, I can bring one extra guy. Because think about it, 1,001, 1,002. The ball's got to be gone. You can't get 10 yards. Shoot, you can't get 10 yards in 2 seconds, especially if I'm bringing heat. So, but if it's third and 2 or third and 3 or 4, now, okay, 1,002, 1,001, I can get rid of the ball, and now you have it. So if you're in third and 2, third and 3, or third and 4, now it's like, okay, I'm not necessarily bringing heat because I know that he's going to get rid of the ball. So now with that concept, now I can double move you and have some shots down the field. That's how Green Bay is going to try to disguise it in certain things. That, okay, now Niners know it's third and 2, third and 3. Okay, they're not coming. They're just saying, okay, we got to play sticks. Now if they're sitting at the sticks, now you can double them and go by them, because that's the concept. You got to get them. You got to give them third and long. And if that happens, you can cut them loose.
Cut them loose.
If you're in Tennessee and you're doing sports talk radio, you're talking about the importance of getting Derrick Henry going. that you need Derrick Henry to have a big game or you can't win. That's been the blueprint. In Kansas City, it's a very similar conversation. You're focusing on Patrick Mahomes, the passing game, and if you get that going, you can win. In Green Bay, similar scenario. Aaron Rodgers needs to have a big game. This is the only team remaining where you can sit here and focus on any number of elements to the game and look at it as being a solid plus that could win the game for you. We've just done 20 minutes on this game. We haven't even mentioned Garoppolo. You can't do that anywhere. You can't go anywhere else in the country and go 20 minutes talking about an NFC or AFC championship game and skip over the quarterback. Wow. And it's not because he's bad. Wow. Like in Tennessee, they'll talk about the importance of Henry because of Tannehill. In Kansas City, it's about Mahomes. How many yards is he going to need to win that game? In Green Bay, Rodgers is going to need to have the game of his life to get by the Niners. And here, you can talk about the pass rush winning in the game, the rushing attack, the run defense, the pass defense, the crowd noise having a huge effect, the situation, the travel, the home field advantage. And then it's like, oh, yeah, you know, you could also get to Garoppolo and Sanders and Samuel and Kittle and the running backs at the backfield. And you think to yourself, that's another way you could win this game. It reminds me of the Warriors going through their best years. You were in a situation with the Warriors where it was so focused on the three-pointer, but we rarely would talk about how much the defense mattered in the biggest spots. Remember that? The defensive metrics were always through the roof, but no one ever paid attention to the defense. It's almost like there are some parallels we can draw between the Warriors, their dynasty, and what's starting in Santa Clara.
It's crazy the parallels, Lo. In the 2014-2015 Golden State Warriors that went on to win the first championship for the franchise since the Rick Barry days, they were 67-15 in the regular season, a winning percentage of 8-17. The Niners this year were 13-3, a winning percentage of 8-13.
Oh, my God.
That's as close as you can possibly get.
I knew you were setting it up to be close. I did not think it was going to be that close.
I was blown away at how close it was. And you look at this 49er team and that Warrior team, even though they were 67-15, the prevailing notion was, well, they still got to get by San Antonio. San Antonio is a team that beat the Warriors two of three times during the regular season. Well, come to find out, the Clippers took San Antonio out in the first round of the playoffs. We were talking about this Niner team, and oh boy, you know, if you could just get to the Super Bowl, you still got to get through Baltimore. Come to find out, Baltimore got taken out in the first round of the postseason, a Baltimore team that had kind of had the 49ers number in that first matchup. So the Warriors got a break along the way. They were dominant. The Niners were dominant. They got a break along the way. Now they need to continue to complete the circle.
I'd almost tweak the analogy and use the Spur analogy and tie it to the Saints instead because of the way they both got unceremoniously kicked out quicker than you would have expected. I think with the Warriors, when you were going into the playoffs, you knew LeBron was going to be waiting for you at the end. That was supposed to be Baltimore.
Not bad.
They got eliminated. LeBron obviously didn't, but LeBron just basically takes on the role of Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs now because you knew one of those two was going to be at the end of the spectrum for you. But the Spurs get knocked out by someone else. The Saints get knocked out by someone else. The deck gets relatively cleared for you to go about your business. That first year, I know it's crazy, but was it the Rockets they beat in the Western Conference Final?
Yes.
Harden
in the old gym.
Yeah. It was Memphis in the second round, and then it was New Orleans in the opening round.
And that's the only thing that this Niner team hasn't done as far as a parallel goes, and maybe we see it this Sunday. Remember, they were in trouble against Memphis. They were down 2-1. The Warriors go to Memphis and they have that big barbecue, and then they went out there and Andre Iguodala in the starting lineup. So maybe you find that parallel this Sunday where the Niners fall behind 14-3 or something, which would be akin to being down 2-1 in the best of seven.
Joe, what do you think about this 9-5? Are you kind of in the same church? Jimmy G could lose you the game. You look at Aaron Rodgers, you look at all the round, look around, Mahomes can't lose your game. Mahomes going to have to take off and do what you said. And that number's set at 350. If Mahomes don't throw for 350 more, they don't beat Tennessee.
That's insane. That's like Burrow in the national championship game. His number was like 365, and he soared over it by 100 yards.
Can you believe it? That's crazy. But that's that.
It's interesting the texter said that, because I was just thinking about that very thing. It's more likely, in my opinion, that Jimmy G loses you the game than he goes out and wins you the game.
Disagree. Disagree. Wholeheartedly disagree. What makes you think that would happen?
I know
it could. I'm going to acknowledge the fact that it could. It obviously could. But what would make us think? How many games this year has Garoppolo lost you? Or has Garoppolo put your team in peril? Early in the season, coming off the ACL, the Tampa game was a little iffy. He had the bad INT early. but he did make the play to Richie James at the start of the second half, which kind of blew the game open a little bit. Cincinnati was a blowout. The Pittsburgh game, he was shaky in that one. One of the INTs, I don't know how many he threw, but the one was tipped up. I can't remember the receiver. It was Goodwin or Pettis. Naturally, that's where I'm going to default. But I remember that the one INT wasn't necessarily his fault. But
he had two fumbles in that game. One wasn't his fault because Debo comes across and they snapped it into him, and that was loose. And they had five turnovers as an offense.
The three losses, though, I'm not putting Baltimore on him. I don't think that's his fault. That was just a better – the Ravens just played better. No one's playing a perfect game there.
Right.
They lost to Seattle, which he was down Kittle and Emmanuel Sanders. He didn't play great in that game.
Fumbled it a couple times.
I don't think he lost him that game, though.
No.
I think, that was a game where two teams made a lot of mistakes. Yeah. It was a good football game, and Seattle made one more play. And then the Atlanta game, he was force-feeding Kittle the entire way, but the defense could not get stops in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
I'm not going into this game worried that Garoppolo could be the reason that they don't win.
Well, I think the Texans are at the 9-5. I don't think that – I think what he's trying to say, if you're on, like last week, Minnesota, is Green Bay, if you throw an interception right there on your own 20 – is Green Bay going to turn that into 7? Now, how do you view the game? You think it's a 7? Let's just say it's a 7-point game. Okay, there goes your 7 points. So now he just made you cover. So now even though say you're going to win the game by 10. Okay, so what if you get a field goal? What if he fumbles again or let's just say you fumble the ball. Now he fumbles the ball. Now you got another field goal. So that's 3. So if you look at it like that, I think if you're looking at it in that perspective. Who's more likely you're looking at, I think, but you can say the same about Aaron Rodgers, but it's like Aaron Rodgers, you're expecting him to carry the game. No one's asking Jimmy G to carry a game. No one's asking Tannehan, that like you laid out, Joe, there's everything in these games, there's factors and there's decisive factors that have to happen.
Mahomes, Henry, and Rodgers,
yes.
They all have to play huge for their teams to
exactly.
win. Here, you don't have the one thing you need to have happen.
Yeah.
Defense can bail out offense. Offense can bail out defense. Passing game can bail out running game. Running game can bail out passing game. Pass defense can bail out run defense. Run defense can bail out pass
defense.
It's
called defense. Balance.
And then you got Mitch kicking those Australian sliders that forced that fumble. That was big. Not enough credit to our boy Mitchapalooza.
Yeah, special teams got to get better.
Big spinner.
They were letting those run. They were letting the kickoffs get back to the 30, 35. I think that's something emphasis getting better.
Whose fault was that? Dibbs came in on Monday, and that was one of the first things he brought up.
Just too much Amir Abdullah.
It was too much.
Whose fault was that, though?
That's guys getting down, and they got to cover.
Because I was going to say, on one hand, it's like, man, just kick it through the end zone so they start at the 25. But kickers are trying to pin them at the 5 to force the return because it's tough to get to the 25 in that scenario. And there's always the risk of a hold, which gets called all the time. So you can get the better field position. But it didn't seem like the Niners got down to cover fast enough.
They didn't.
Or at least Minnesota did a great job of setting up their block.
So that just tells you got to do a better job of getting down there and covering the punts because you change field position. They were starting sometimes at the 35. It got us out to the 40. You got to be better. You got to be better.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning. Welcome to the continuation of Championship Week here on 95.7 The Game. We are now three days away from the NFC Championship game, returning to the Bay Area as the Niners find themselves 7.5-point favorites against the visiting Green Bay Packers. Kick time at 3:40 p.m. local. It's going to be Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on the call, and have I got some news for you? I heard Joe Buck's joining us tomorrow on this fine program.
Oh, that is so great.
Joe Buck.
Joe Buck. Love him. It's going to be awesome.
Two syllables. The minimum amount required for a full name. Joe Buck.
Looking
not on Mount Joe Moore. We've already decided.
No.
Montana, Namath, Theismann, Courtside.
Oh, jeez. Oh, I'm still stuck on that fourth one. We may have to put the Rushmore down to just three heads.
Yeah.
That's
we have
not
to
how
lop
Rushmore
off the four.
Works, as you know.
Trust me, I'm the OG Rushmore here
true.
Of all things Rushmore.
Gotta agree with you there.
Do you agree with that? You agree that he claims he started the Mount Rushmore bit back in the 80s, or was it 90s?
It was the 90s, and I also started the movement for March Madness in Vegas.
Those are his two claims to fame.
Definitely, and those are both factual. Much like Matt Steinmetz was the first one to wear baggy basketball shorts. Which I'm still looking for second source confirmation.
It wasn't the Fab Five. It
no,
was Steinmetz.
It was the Fab Stein. It wasn't the Fab Five. It was the Fab Stein. Yeah, Joe Buck, that'll be awesome because I think he gets a bad rap in this market, especially among San Francisco Giants fans who think that he's anti-Giants. Why does Joe Buck hate my team? I don't think that Joe Buck hates any team.
We can ask him
He's
tomorrow,
a pro's
right?
pro, and I look forward to his dry wit and his stylings on the call on Sunday.
He's at 8:30 tomorrow. Joe Buck at 8:30 tomorrow. He has told these stories before. Howard Stern, I think he was on with Colin Cowherd once. He tells these stories because everywhere he goes, every fan base thinks Buck is out to get them. I remember living in Pennsylvania when the Phillies went to the World Series. They had to get by the Dodgers in the NLCS. There was like a day of sports talk radio dedicated to how Buck wasn't excited enough for the final play that got the Phillies to the World Series. People thought Buck, he really wanted the Dodgers because it was great for the TV revenue, which probably was the case. But Buck isn't necessarily, Buck's getting paid one way or another. He's not necessarily interested in that. He's calling games. He's not going to compromise his reputation on a game-winning call because he doesn't necessarily like the TV matchup. But that was the narrative in Philly. Buck hates us because he wasn't excited enough on the final call. That was dissected for an entire day.
Wow.
Right. So everywhere Buck goes, he's under the impression everybody hates him because everyone tells them they hate him. He's not out to get anybody. His life is good. He's doing pretty well. He doesn't need to be out to get anybody.
Married to Michelle Biesner, former TV sideline reporter and host. He's got a couple of young kids. The twins,
I believe.
Yeah. Couple of young kids, so he's living his best life.
See, right here, Chilton Auto Body, text line 95795. Joe Buck is crap. Nothing to do with this Giants hate. Just really bad. No. That's a disagreement.
I hate to denominate that, but
do you have any idea what Buck's schedule looks like over the course of the year? This year, he's got the Super Bowl, the U.S. Open, Thursday Night Football, massive NFL playoff games throughout, the World Series.
He's not very good, Joe.
Like Buck Buck and Jim Nantz are just constantly calling massive events.
What makes you think Buck? What makes Buck great in your opinion? Well, watching him, listening to him,
he's dialed in. He's not.
He doesn't say a lot.
The
he
joke about the
lot,
economy right? of words, and he gets it. He gets the times where you can let the crowd noise dictate. He gives you what you need. He doesn't try to do too much. Nobody wants too much. And him and Aikman are solid. Aikman's solid in the booth next to him. This is a guy who grew up rooting against Aikman. I hate Aikman. He played for the Cowboys. Yeah. Aikman's solid. It's a good booth. We get so wrapped up in some of these booths, and we get mad when the booth is bad. Everyone's upset about the Monday Night Football booth. That's a good booth. That is a good booth between Buck and Aikman. There's no reason to get upset. Buck does the World Series fantastic as well. He's terrific.
I wish you could come around like that. This is a guy who's had everyone in Philly was on Buck, and he just but
everyone
Joe,
everywhere. You don't need to just locate Philly. I'm literally here too in the city you're in.
I'm making a point, Joe, that you say hey, but you give credit and say Buck is good. Dibs on
he's
another
great.
Hand, he said great, not good, but great. And then you know you got a Romo hater. Certain things that you do is like. Well, when you get to a point where
what
like,
I was a Romo helper, because what you saw in the first year of Antonio Romo was he interrupted Nantz ad nauseum, and I simply pointed that out on this very program.
And Nantz said
and
he
what
disagreed.
Did we find out in the second year, this past year for Tony Romo? Interruptions were down about 90% across the board. He got better. And Tony, I know you're part of the billions. You're out there listening. You're welcome.
We love you, Tony. Antonio Ramiro Romo. We love him. Headed for 10 to 15 million. ESPN's got that.
And I hope he breaks me off a little taste of that because I was at the forefront of helping him get better
who
as a broadcaster.
Who weren't you at the forefront of? I mean, who weren't you?
I haven't really helped you very much. That's obvious.
Yeah. Thank God.
If I just don't say anything now, what happens?
It
feels
awkward.
Like a moment where I need to jump in, but I kind of don't want to.
If it were Jim Cosmore, you would point out that it is 8:08, and good morning, everyone.
It's a rook move. That's going into the time to bail you out is such a rook move. It's a Cosmore move.
Cozy's
so
listening.
You just
it's
shut your yapper.
Time or politics to get out of a jam.
It's 8:08 in the Bay Area.
No
good morning.
The only guy on earth who uses politics to get out of a jam. Jonathan in San Francisco. I go to the people. Jonathan in San Francisco, thank you for your patience on hold. Big game this weekend. What are you thinking?
Hey, man. I think I fully expect a pretty good game from Jimmy, man. 300 yards or close to. And I expect the ground game to have at least 115 between three of those.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.